There are lots of different bits to the Christmas story, as you know, and part of it comes really a little bit later rather than at the birth of Jesus. But there's the story of these wise men who come from the east, and they're looking for the king of the Jews. It's just, they weren't looking for the prince of the Jews, they were looking for the king of the Jews. And you remember that they went to Jerusalem. First of all, they assumed that's where, surely if he's the king of the Jews, Jerusalem is or is not the capital of Israel. And so that's the place to go. And so that's where they turned up. But the man in power at that time was Herod. Herod wasn't a Jew. He was really a sort of puppet king of the Romans. And he was not very pleased, as you remember, about it. But if you remember, what happened was he called his own wise men in, the chief priests, the experts in the law and so on, and he asked them, well, where is Messiah going to be born? And they were able to tell him, of course, because they quoted one of the minor prophets then, they quoted Micah, and the place then where it says, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. And that's the verse I want us to look at this morning. It's in Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. So if you have your Bible open at page 933, if it's a church Bible, if it's your own Bible, you'll have to work out where it is, but it's in these church Bibles, it's page 933, and it's there in chapter 5. Well, in our versions, it's chapter 5. The Jews have got a slightly different chapter order for some reason, I don't know why. But it's chapter 5 and verse 2 in our Bibles. Now, we don't know very much about Micah. He came from Moresheth, which is probably Moresheth Gath in southern Judah. So somewhere there in the south of Judah. He lived about the same time as Isaiah, and his style is quite similar to Isaiah's. He's very sort of vigorous and lots of pictures. It's nice to get pictures, isn't it? It helps us to think what's being said. And like many of the prophets then, Micah, what he has to say is there's a lot of doom and gloom. You get that in the prophets. That's why it's difficult sometimes to read the Old Testament prophets. They're very doom and gloom. But there's always some hope as well. There's always a bit of hope in there. And in Micah chapter 4, verse 6 to 13, Micah's talking about a coming day when God is going to gather what's always called a remnant, a remainder then, to himself. Now, before that, there are going to be a lot of troubles ahead for the people of God. And he talks about the exile. You know how they were thrown out of the promised land. They were taken away by the Babylonians. So he talks about how that's going to happen. But there's also this promise of an eventual victory over the nations. And so then as we come into chapter 5, we begin with another warning of trouble ahead. That's how it starts. But then there's this wonderful promise then of future blessing. And it's going to come from an unexpected place. That's the thing about it. It's not going to come from where you expect it to come. And I think we're constantly in need of hearing messages like this, aren't we? We need to be encouraged. We need hope in our day. So, a number of things then. You'll find on the sheet, whatever the sheet has gone. Oh, there it is. There are 3 points, aren't there? So first of all, they all begin the same. They consider Messiah and Bethlehem. That's what we're thinking about this morning. So Bethlehem, we've just been singing it, haven't we? It's a little town in Judah. So Micah says, chapter 5, verse 1, he says, marshal your troops now, city of troops, for a siege is laid against us. They will strike Israel's ruler on the cheek with a rod. So the first verse is talking about trouble. And this trouble is ahead then for Jerusalem. That's the city he's talking about. Now, I don't know exactly what he's talking about. He could be thinking about, you know, the Assyrians. Before the Babylonians, the Assyrians were the great power. And they took the northern tribes into exile. But they were unsuccessful with the south. And so he could be talking about the siege then that the Assyrians brought about during the time of King Hezekiah. But then he also speaks a good deal of the coming triumph of the Babylonians. So maybe he's looking forward to that time that was going to occur as well. It was the Babylonians who actually took Judah into exile. Of course, that wasn't the last time that Jerusalem was surrounded like that. When you go on through the Bible, when you come into the New Testament, then Jesus tells them that Jerusalem is going to fall, and that happened historically then in 70 AD. And that's probably in mind as well. I think all three sieges are probably in Micah's mind here. So trouble, that's the point, trouble. If you belong to the Lord, if you say you're a Christian, then you're going to hit trouble. That's how it goes when you're a Christian. But then, you see, he goes on. But, he says, you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah. Well, there's a blessing coming. And I think that's the third time we've had that sort of contrast in a short space. If you go back to the previous chapter, and verse 10, you'll see there what he says, you will go to Babylon. But he says, there you will be rescued. You'll be rescued. So you will go into exile, but you'll be rescued. And in verses 11 to 13 then, the last verses of chapter 4, he talks about many nations gathered against you. But he says, they do not know the thoughts of the Lord. They don't know his plan, that he has gathered them like sheaves to the threshing floor. Rise and thresh, he says, for I will give you horns of iron, hooves of bronze, and you will break in pieces many nations. And I think here then, as we come into chapter 5, verse 2 is full of comfort, full of encouragement for believers as well. Just as verse 1 then sort of gets us ready for the troubles. You know, it's like when you're eating, you know, when you're a child, were you taught this when you're a child? You need to eat something savoury first, isn't it? You can't go straight to the pudding, to the cakes. You've got to eat something savoury first. Well, it's a little bit like that in Micah. First of all, he tells you that, you know, the thing of those bad news, good news jokes, isn't it? First of all, it's the bad news. You've got to know the bad news. But, then he says, there's good news that follows on. So verse 1, it sort of whets the appetite then for the comforts that we find in verse 2. Micah's been talking about the city of Jerusalem then, about the capital, about King David's city. That's where the temple was. That's where the life of the nation focused. But now he turns our attention away from Jerusalem. We're traveling, it's about 6 miles to the southwest there, on the road to Hebron. And he calls it Bethlehem Ephrathah. He wants to distinguish it. There is another Bethlehem in the north of the country, and maybe one or two others. Bethlehem means house of bread, and Ephrathah then means fruitful. And I suppose there were probably two places. You know how it goes with these things. You've got Bethlehem and Ephrathah quite close together, and they just become one. You know, it's like London, isn't it? Did you ever get this confusion? People say, I'm in London, they say. And they're actually in Westminster, but they, you know, there are two cities, aren't there, that make up this city. There's Westminster and there's London to the east. In fact, I think it's only a square mile, isn't it? There's actually London and then there's Westminster. And so it happens like that sometimes, you know. I don't know Manchester and Salford, but I always get the impression they're the same sort of place. Or, you know, have you ever been to Budapest? I've almost never been there. When you people talk, they say, well, it's two cities, actually. There's Buda and there's Pest. You say, well, not really, is it? No, apparently it is. There's a river in the middle, Budapest. So Bethlehem Ephrathah was like that. I think it was Bethlehem Ephrathah. They were just the same place. And this is the strange thing then. One moment Micah is focusing on a great city under siege then. And now he wants us to think about a really insignificant, a rather obscure village. In fact, if you go, you know, in the book of Joshua, the land is allotted to the different tribes. Bethlehem's not mentioned. It's not really such a big deal. Bethlehem's in there, somewhere in Judah, but it's not mentioned because it's such an obscure and a small place. And that's often then God's way. While all the focus is on the big city, while all the focus is on the famous people, and all the focus is on the well-populated place, God turns his attention then to the quiet place, the forgotten place. And I think in and of itself, there's a lesson for us here then. We tend to suppose that strength lies in the obvious place, then. You know, the biggest, the most numerous then, the most popular and so on. And in fact, very often then, it's in the least expected place that God gives his best gifts. I mean, we're not that many here this morning, are we? And you might be tempted to say, well, I should be down in St. Paul's or somewhere where there's a big, big gathering. That would be the place to be. Well, maybe you'll get a blessing there. But don't forget that God also blesses where there's just a small number, where there's just a handful as well. And then the thing about Judah, as we know, of course, is that although Jerusalem was the city of Judah, the city of David, that's where the kings reigned then. But the little town of Bethlehem, of course, is where David came from. He was born and grew up in Bethlehem. You remember the book of Ruth, perhaps. In the book of Ruth, we read about how Ruth then meets this man, Boaz, and they're brought together. And it all takes place in Bethlehem. And they have a little boy at the end of the story. It's a little boy called Obed. Now, Obed was the father of Jesse. You know who Jesse was, don't you? Jesse was the father of David. That's one of the reasons why the book of Ruth is in our Bibles, because this is the story of David. Jesse himself had 8 sons. And you remember when Samuel came, God had told Samuel then that he was to anoint one of Jesse's sons to be king. And so Jesse brought 7 of his sons before Samuel, and they're all wondering, which ones are going to be? Obviously the oldest one. Oh, not the oldest one. Well, it must be the next one. Next one? It's none of these. Samuel says, you got any other sons? He says, well, Jesse says, there's David. He's out in the field. He's looking after the sheep. We didn't even bother to bring him in because he's obviously not going to become the king, is he? Well, he's the one, isn't he? He's the one who Samuel pours out the oil on David's head, the least expected one. And the various kings of Judah, then they're all descended from David. And so Micah says, yes, he says, a time is coming when they will strike Israel's ruler on the cheek with a rod. And distressing times are ahead for you and for your king. Jerusalem's going to go down. But he says, don't despair. Look to little Bethlehem. Help has come from there in the past, and it will again. One Old Testament scholar puts it like this. He says, the kings born in proud Jerusalem failed. The Messiah incarnated in lowly Bethlehem triumphs. Bethlehem, that's the place. So you remember what a disaster Saul's reign was. The king before David was Saul. And you know, Saul was a tall man. He was head and shoulders above the people. He was everything that they thought they wanted. He was a failure. It was a mess. A moral failure, the Philistines were threatening to overrun the country. But then God raised up David, and he rescued his people through David. He sent them a shepherd after his own heart to lead the people to victory. And he took Jerusalem from the Jebusites at a certain point. And he did reign from Jerusalem. Eventually, after he reigned in Hebron for 7 years, then he reigned in Jerusalem. And he held it for a long time. Now, in the same way I'm saying to you then this morning, I'm saying to you, look to Bethlehem. You've got problems. You've got needs. There are things that concern you. Your sins stand against you. Quite apart from anything else, you, like me, you're a sinner, aren't you? You've sinned against God. And you are guilty. You're weak then. You may not be physically weak, but you're weak in other ways. You're wayward by nature. Do you not see this in yourself, that you there's this tendency to go the wrong way? What is that? There's this tendency to go off at a tangent. We're all getting older, aren't we, day by day? Older and older. It won't be very long before all of us are in our graves. And we must face that. And maybe there are particular things that worry you and distress you at this time. And it seems as though Jerusalem is surrounded by foreign armies, and there's little hope of rescue. Well, I'm saying to you this morning, look to Bethlehem. That's the place to look, isn't it? Look there, then. Look to the little baby in the manger. That's the place to look for help. So that's the first thing. I think the longest thing I want to say to you this morning, then, consider Messiah and Bethlehem are a little town in Judah. Second, consider Messiah and Bethlehem. And, of course, this is the focus, isn't it? The birth that took place there. What is the blessing that Micah sees coming from Bethlehem? He says, out of you, Bethlehem, will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. This is God speaking, isn't it? Out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. Why should I look to Bethlehem for blessing? Well, you know why, isn't it? Because it's out of Bethlehem that the one who rules over Israel comes. Just as God called David from Bethlehem all those years before, Micah says he's going to do it again. He's going to do it again. He's going to call someone from there who will be ruler over Israel. And I don't think there's any doubt, is there, about who he is talking about. You know the story very well, don't you? In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. So the one who appeared to be the most important man in the world, he makes this decree. Well, we need to do this. And everyone went to his own town to register. And so Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. And she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. That's a striking providence, isn't it? Being born in Bethlehem. He lived most of his life in Nazareth. That's why he's known as Jesus of Nazareth, but he was actually born in Bethlehem. That's where he started from. So here's the king then. Here's the one who is the ruler of his people. Here's the one, it's interesting, isn't it, who God says rules for me. This is the way that God has set up his kingdom then. So that Jesus then, the Son of God, he's the one who rules for God then. He rules on behalf of the Father, if you like. It's for me. He was not an earthly king, of course. Far from it. They persecuted him to death. We will not have this man to rule over us, they said. But his kingdom is not of this world then. It's a spiritual kingdom now. And in time to come then, when he returns, he will rule everywhere and over everything. And so he's out of you then, out of Israel. And he's for me. For God then. So he's truly man, and yet he is truly God then. I don't know if you follow football. I do now and again, but not very much. You've heard of Mo Salah though. Mo Salah is a Liverpool player. Liverpool are top of the Premier League at the moment. And Mo Salah is from Egypt. He was born in a place called Nagrig. Probably saying it wrong. Nagrig. I don't know how you say it. It's a little place, about 15,000 people. So every now and again, you know, they're sat there at the Guardian or the BBC or wherever this. Well, send somebody to Nagrig. So they all go down to Nagrig. Then it's quite a few miles from Cairo, and they have to come up with a story. Well, there's not much to write about, really. So they see boys playing football. They love that. Always get a picture of the boys playing football in the Greek. That's how Mo Salah must have played football when he was a kid. And they talk about the charity work that Mo Salah does, and they also course he does charity work. You know, he's a good Muslim. Of course he does charity work. That's what he does. There's no story there. They try and tell you stories about how his daily journey to Cairo when he was learning to be a footballer. But there's really not much of a story that they can make. It's just that one of the greatest footballers in the world happens to have been born in a village. That's really the whole of the story. You know, if you watch the news around this time of the year, it's usually on Christmas Day. If you watch the news, they go to Bethlehem, you know. And now we go live to Bethlehem. Now, I've watched that for years and years. Just now and again, there's something happening. You know, the Arabs are fighting against the Israel, or Israel are doing something. But usually there's nothing happening. You get these pilgrims, they go to these silly churches in Bethlehem. There's no story. There's no story. There really isn't. But they just think, well, you know, we've got a budget, we've got some money, we'll send somebody to Bethlehem, they can report, and that'll make a nice little thing on Christmas Day. And, you know, Bethlehem is nowhere, it's not an important place at all, except for the fact that the Messiah was born there. That's the thing that makes it important. That's what puts it on the map. And the lesson for us there is that if we look to the Lord Jesus, then everything will be fine. He's died, of course. That's part of the reason why he came. But he rose again from the dead on the third day, triumphant over sin, over death, over the devil, over hell. And he is the Lord of all. And you must bow down to him. We're all going to bow down to him one day. We're all going to bow down to him and say, yes, he is the Lord. So I'm saying to you this morning, don't wait. Don't put it off. Serve him today. Make the whole purpose of your life just to serve him, just to do what pleases him. That's the way to live. Any other way is just a form of madness. So that's the second thing this morning then. Consider Messiah and Bethlehem, the birth that took place there. And then the third and the final thing, consider Messiah and Bethlehem and the fact the one born there is eternal. He's eternal. You notice in the last part of this verse that Micah tells us that this ruler is one whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Now, I think this is perhaps the most interesting part of the verse. It is the most difficult part of the verse, but it is also the most interesting. I think if we'd not seen this before then, this phrase should confirm to us then. Now, the person that Micah is talking about is no ordinary person, is it? This is not just a king then. This is a supernatural king. This is a king who is eternal in his character, whose origins are from of old. Some translations put whose coming forth is from old. And I think it may be that the idea is that over many years then he has been coming into this world. And then that final phrase, from ancient times, you could translate it from eternity just as well. And I think we've always got to remember that then, and it will help our faith, of course, then, that the baby born in Bethlehem, although he's fully human, and sometimes we struggle to get that, it was a virgin conception. But everything else is the same then. He's in Mary's womb, the same as we were all in our mother's wombs then, for 9 months, hopefully. And then he was born in the normal way. And Mary did what she did because of the customs of the time, because it was cold, because there was no room at the inn. It wasn't an ideal situation, but she did what was best for him. But we've got to remember that he also has an eternal generation there. Yes, he was born in Bethlehem, but that's not the whole story, is it? We've read from John's Gospel, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was, he was with God and he was God. That's who he is. And all the way through John's Gospel, you get these reminders of who this is then. In John 6, Jesus himself says, I have come down from heaven, he says. Now, you said, well, you were born in Bethlehem. Well, yes, but he's come down from heaven. That's the truth. Before Abraham was, Jesus says, I am. Now, that's a doubler there. Because if he'd said, before Abraham was, I was, Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Because they say to him, they say, well, you're not 50 yet. Well, how can you say that you're before Abraham? But not only is he saying before Abraham was, I was, he's saying before Abraham was, I am. And you know what I am means, don't you? I am is one of the ways that God reveals himself. Who are you? I am. I am. We've mentioned John chapter 1 then. In the beginning was the Word was with God. He was at the Father's side. John chapter 17 verse 5. Jesus is praying to his Father. He says, and now, Father, glorify me with the glory I had with you before the world began. Now, if you heard somebody praying like that, you'd know he'd gone mad. The glory I had with you before the world began. And yet Jesus speaks, he speaks like that. He is Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he was worthy of all worship when he was born in Bethlehem. But he was always before that. He's now and he ever will be. And so throughout the Old Testament then you get these mysterious stories. You know, people like to read ghost stories at Christmas, don't they? And if you want a sort of a mysterious story, you look at the story of Jacob and the wrestling match he had with that mysterious man Jacob wouldn't let him go. And so he just touched his thigh and he was gone. He was finished. He limped for the rest of his life. After that. Or do you know the story of Daniel's three friends in the fiery furnace in the days of Nebuchadnezzar? And how Nebuchadnezzar looks into the fiery furnace. He says, how many people did we put in there? And they said, three. He said, well, how come I can see four people in there? Well, the reason he can see four people in there, and one, he says, he looks like a son of the gods, is because the one then whose comings forth are from eternity. He was there in the fiery furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so he is the eternal God, and yet he was born there in Bethlehem. You know, in this country, there are ancient legends of King Arthur. Have you read some of the legends of King Arthur? The poet Tennyson calls him the once and future king. And you know, the idea is that when Britain is in trouble, then King Arthur will rise up and he'll help us. I don't think people talk about that anymore. It's just a legend anyway. King Arthur, whoever he was, whenever exactly he lived, he's dead and he's gone. And he's never risen from his grave. Although he will, of course, like we all will at the end of time. Now, Messiah then, people talked about King Arthur in days of old, so people talked about the Messiah in the Old Testament times. But it's not a legend. It is something that has actually happened. And we must look to him then. We must put our trust in him. We must know his blessings then, now and always. Well, may we.